Welcome to episode 3 of the LGBT Family and Games podcast. My name is James. I am joined by Alex and Jay. And today we actually have a very special guest joining us, Christian, or Chris, whichever you prefer. Exactly. Yes. And let's get started. Give us a little intro about yourself. Tell us what makes you so special and important and not completely boring.
So hello,
his mommy
my name
says
is...
he is.
I was about to say that, damn it, to take away all my puns. My name is Christian. I'm 21 years old. I'm from Germany. And currently I do a lot of biology-related stuff. I do LGBTQ-related work and help spread awareness about certain LGBTQ topics and stuff like that.
So wait, Jay, is this the salmon sperm guy?
Yes.
That would be accurate.
Yes, this is the man of salmon sperm, yes.
Okay.
I think you should probably divulge into it more than that so we don't end up calling you that.
Probably a good idea.
But so, after the initial conversation we had, obviously that was most of what I got from it. So, yeah, feel free to lay that out for us.
So, yeah, indeed, I do stuff with salmon sperm. What I'm trying to do currently is to genetically modify Lactobacillus remensis with salmon sperm DNA so that I can incorporate genes from E. coli bacteria so that those certain bacteria will be able to part lactose into beta glucose and alpha galactose. And this could potentially be used later in persons with lactose intolerance to get rid of their symptoms or maybe, well, get them to have milder symptoms out of their intolerance.
Okay.
So like a half of that went over Jay's head, I think.
My main worry is if you're not careful, they'll overdose on all of these different things that you'll find in there. So,
all right, let's start the pun.
Overdose. Is that like a COVID comatose?
Yes.
I think that one was too high for me.
Okay, all right. Moving on. Whatever. So basically what you're doing is trying to negate lactose from dairy products, essentially.
No, that's not what we're trying to do. We try to get people who...
Well, what are you doing? Tell me what you're doing. I want to know. I don't want to know about...
Well, I try to get...
ins and outs of E. coli. I don't know science, right?
I want to... So in your small intestine, I just assume that you're able to eat dairy products, are you, Jay?
I had a bad time with some ice cream the other day.
Okay, but like in normal days, you're able to like drink milk, are you?
Yeah, I had cereal this morning. It was
all right. Okay, that was all right. And you're not like sitting on the toilet right now trying to give birth to...
No, not this very moment.
Okay, good. So what I try to do...
schedule around that.
What I try to do is help lactose intolerant people to eat dairy products again, and they do not have to search for dairy-free alternatives. They can just straight up eat the dairy again. So we try to take the bacteria that then act as a lactose enzyme that those people lack and incorporate that into the small intestines. And the reason why you can part lactose is because in your small intestines, like in the cilia in there, there are actually enzymes called lactase that will just break down lactose into glucose and galactose. And those sugars can then be just resorbed by your body. However, if this is not made, all of those sugars will just go into your big intestine and the bacteria there will feed on it. It will bind water to it. And when we look at what lactose is doing in an environment like this, we get all of the symptoms of lactose intolerance. So you get how do you call it? When something is hurting, it's
like an upset stomach. Painful.
You get an upset stomach. Let's call it that. Yeah, I'm not good enough at English to explain it in a way that is scientifically accurate. Okay. You get an upset stomach. You get diarrhea, perhaps, and there is like a lot of gas being formed. And of course, you don't want that. So if we have this bacteria incorporated in the small intestines of human who do not have the lactose enzyme in them, we can get the bacteria to act as the lactose enzyme for them. So they can just eat dairy products again, if everything goes right. Could be that it's going to be a complete failure.
Okay. Yeah, actually,
so what you're doing obviously sounds pretty helpful for people. Yeah. What persuaded you to actually start doing it in the first place? Like, obviously, I think it's quite rare for someone to come up with the idea of doing that, considering I guess it's not something that's been done. So how did you end up coming across wanting to do it?
I've seen people who tried to do gene therapy on their own. Like, they try to do it yourself gene therapy, like genome therapy. They try to alter their DNA in order to like produce lactose again in their small intestine. They try to do that with AAD, which is an RDNA-associated virus that is the go-to standard in most of genetic procedures. So basically, you take this virus that is known to like mold with your cells over time and then incorporates its DNA, like its viral RNA, with your DNA sometimes. And what they were trying to do is like take big amounts of those virus, incorporate the lactose G, like the LacZ gene into it, and then just get it into the small intestine somehow and just hope for the best. And I was like,
so basically you've seen people struggle with it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not lactose intolerant, but I really love cheese. And I think it would be awful if I couldn't be able to eat cheese anymore. I really enjoy cheese pizza and lasagna and all that. And I don't know. Like, and
the best kind of cheese is, of course, the American kind.
Yeah, absolutely.
No.
Never.
No. In burgers, yes. Everything else, no.
Not even in burgers. They don't deserve it. Burgers don't deserve that poor treatment.
American cheese better. Is by far the best cheese ever. Ever.
For a burger, like a few other orange things, I personally am not a fan.
I mean, the American cheese I have is an orange over here, so I don't know. But yeah, I mean, if you watch any like high-end chef making a burger, they'll be like, I really apologize for this, but it is actually the best thing to use for this.
And everybody agrees.
Generally speaking, it is actually good for burgers. So, yeah. You'll probably catch some using different bits, but that's just because they don't want to be caught out using that kind of stuff. But if you're looking for actual flavor, generally, it is the best. Anyway, moving on. Hemming, or Chris, or Christian. What would you want me to call you?
You can call me Chris. That's fine.
Chris? Yeah. Okay, we'll go with Chris. I also know that you do LARPing, which is like live-action role-playing. So what does that actually entail? I've seen it in the movie Role Models, and I know me and James were talking about it in the past. Obviously, it's put in a bit of a funny, comedic light, but if you want to just break that down for us, because I didn't even really know it was something that actually happened. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's groups of like 10 people that, you know, play Lord of the Rings and hit swords against each other, but I didn't realize it was like a professionally done thing. So yeah, if you want to just tell me a little bit about that.
So I happen to be in Europe, and we have like a lot of these medieval landscapes, like castles, buildings that are basically older than America. Sorry to say that, James. I currently live in a house that's actually older than America, and this is deemed something normal here in Europe. Like, you can throw a rock and you will hit a castle or some fragment of a castle that has stood there like a few hundred years ago. And so, given that we have like this historical background, we're kind of obsessed with medieval times here in Europe, and it doesn't really seem to be that much of a surprise that people get the idea to dress up in medieval garb and try to reenact those certain things. But that's called reenactment. And people who are not like that into historics basically just thought, oh, well, I love fantasy. I love medieval stuff. Let's just mix all of that. And well, why not reenact that like in real life? Why not have this Lord of the Ring feeling that I get when I read a book or when I watch a movie, getting that in real life? So I think some nerds in the 50s, they started to dress up and meet each other. And there were probably like groups of four people walking through the forest, pretending they're elves and shit like this. Sorry. But it has really grown. Like, the standard has risen, especially here in Europe. Like, you can't really compare that to American LARP or LARP everywhere else. Germany seems to be like the capital next to like Poland and Russia. When it comes to garments, to armories, and providing of certain things. And we have one of the biggest LARPs, like three of the biggest LARPs worldwide here in Germany. They're called the Drachenfest, the Epic Empires, and there are like thousands of people from all over the world coming together, just getting into this character that they like wrote themselves, designed themselves, and provided garment themselves for, and just act as the character for 24/7, just for the fun of it.
Really?
Yeah, we like
all day long.
All day long, we
you've mentioned a week long before, right?
Exactly. Like we live in tents for that time. We don't have like certain access to like. Of course, we have modern toilets and showers. That's like a luxury. Like person from the 21st century, not like to miss. But I actually know of people who go to LARPs that actually do not have like real showers. Like they. Bathe in like a stream or something. They go to toilet in like a little hole in the ground. I think that's a bit extreme. I don't do that certainly, but I really enjoy the immersive nature of like sleeping in a tent for like a week, acting as a character, not breaking character. That really is like it's quite interesting. Yes.
Okay, so I mean, obviously. So you do it yourself. So what role do you actually play when you do it? Yeah. Like what's kind of like the background or basis of your character, I guess?
I borrowed my background. I play a character from the Witcher universe. I used to read the books like 5 years ago and I'm obsessed with them. Like I provided guides for other LARPers and my books basically look like this. So that I have like all the info about certain topics in there and marked it all out. Like I can answer you every question about the Witcher universe. They're great books, by the way. I can just recommend them. Most people only know them from Netflix or the games, but like the books behind them are just chef's kisses. I play a mage from Barnard and I'm currently the consultant of an noble that's from Nilfgaard, and it's quite funny. Yes, he's a real archetype, though.
So you play a mage. Is historical accuracy important in your LARP sessions, or is that are there different kinds, like some that are really historically accurate or some that are just more fantasy?
So we as a group, we try to keep it as historically accurate as possible. We get inspiration, of course, from the sources that we have, like The Witcher 3 games, for example. Those are great examples. And we kind of make a mix out of historical accurate things, things that actually work and serve a purpose, and then try to incorporate certain elements that just give this Witcher feeling. For example, I've got like... my hosen, for example, are historically cut, but like the patterns of a decoration I use are not historical.
Okay. Fair enough. Have you ever come into any like really, really weird situations while laughing? Or has someone ever done anything really, really weird and you've been like, what's going on?
Okay. I just say it straight out. LARPers tend to be weird folks. I've seen a lot of stuff that's not PG-16 at all, so I'm not going to dive too deep into that, but I've seen people like...
Like exhibitionism?
Oh no, I'm talking like straight up sex, but that's not a topic I think one should talk about in a podcast. people get freaky when they're in costumes. That's just weird. I don't want to talk about
exhibitionism
that.
Exhibitionism still seems probably like the right word in this situation, but in a different context, I suppose.
So there's a certain feeling to when you like go into a forest and you're just walking your dog and then there are suddenly like, I don't know, like 15 guys around a campfire performing some kind of blood ritual where there's somebody like bound onto your table and they like reenact cutting them open. And it can be scary sometimes. So I maybe have been one of those people covered in blood trying to explain to a person walking their dog that this is nothing that they should not call the police.
Nothing to worry about.
Exactly.
Please don't call the police.
She wasn't.
We're just pretending to do human sacrifice.
While we're at it, your dog looks very healthy. How attached are you it?
So we need.
Wow.
We actually had like a
one of the cults. It was the dog.
We actually were NPCs for a campaign, and the players were supposed to find us performing this ritual and to stop us from sacrificing that woman. But they took too long, so we sacrificed a woman. We had like all those silicone entrails hanging from her. It looked really gory. It was really realistic. I loved every second of it. Well, after our dead body stopped talking to her and was like, yeah, nothing to worry about, just like fake. She was like, she wanted to snap a picture with us and just go away again. But yeah, that was really weird. Another time
so somebody wanted to snap a selfie with the lady with the entrails hanging out and blood all over the place.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, stuff like that.
In Rome.
Yeah, I guess so. Or Germany, right?
In Germany, yes.
Okay. Well, doesn't Germany also has, they have a lot of different types of things. It's not just LARP, right? It's, I think, Alex, you brought up something about Germany, right?
Well, with Germany, there are so many, I mean, everybody talks about Oktoberfest. That's the popular generic one that everybody's going to know about. But there are a bunch of different fests. You can probably go any weekend and drive a certain amount of time, and you'll probably find one, at least over the summer. My parents used to live in Germany. That's where my brother was born. So,
So first of all,
accurate, Chris?
I mean, first of all, Oktoberfest is Bavarian. We are indeed do not wear lederhosen or any of that type of stuff. That's Bavarian. However, like this German stereotype that people get from wearing lederhosen and drinking beer on Oktoberfest is Bavarian. However, Bavarian kind of molded up with Germany in the past 10 years, I think, and it's now part of Germany. It used to be its own country back in the days. Still, Germans do not enjoy being reduced on Oktoberfest because it's really not that much part of our culture. And I think Oktoberfest is obnoxious. Oh my God, the stuff you see at Oktoberfest is just awful. If you've ever been there, there's no need to go another time.
I just want to be there for the alcohol. I don't even care about the lederhosen or anything. I'm just there for the event.
So the beer is mostly stale and overpriced. The people are really damn drunk. And if you're gay, you're actually not allowed to hold hands. At least you weren't 2 years ago. Oh, they ask gay couples to maybe keep it to themselves. They could go into the gay tent. Like in Oktoberfest, there are a lot of tents with different thematics, and there was like an LGBTQ camp, like a gay tent, and they were asked to like keep their affection to themselves in the camp. To like, I mean, there are a lot of conservative old men there, so they probably
I mean, that sounds like a bit of a Rosa Parks situation for gay people, but at the same time, I bet the gay tent's pretty lit.
Yes.
I can.
I bet it's a party.
I can tell you the gay tent is quite the party, yes. Yes. Good times, good times.
It probably worked out fairly okay.
However, the people there just... The Bavarians don't even like Oktoberfest because all of the tourists and all of the people coming from Germany ruining it. It's really... However, yeah, there are a lot of fests to come back to your question. Sorry, I kind of drifted off into Oktoberfest. There are a lot of festivities actually in Germany. Like if you do not have... We always find an excuse to drink alcohol, really, and to eat some Bratwurst. So, yeah, you can just drive into the next village and probably find a festivity there.
Okay.
Well, speaking of,
I'll try it someday.
Speaking of LGBT, you brought up the gay tent, and I know that you're in an LGBT organization. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about your volunteer work and, you know, what you guys do, what your mission is, all that kind of stuff.
So basically, our concept is we get invited by groups that see the need of like a little bit of education on the LGBTQ topics. And we go to schools, maybe after somebody has outed themselves, maybe after some teachers said some homophobic stuff. And students ask for somebody to like educate them. And we get audited there.
Okay.
We're actually funded by the state, by our Ministry for Education. And we go there and try to spread awareness of LGBTQ topics, of trans rights, for example. We also just spread the knowledge that we have to other people that may not have any access to that lot, to that knowledge to begin with. And when it, for example, comes to trans people, for example, so many people do not know that trans people exist. Straight people, for example, just do not have the concept of transsexuality being a thing at all, because it's not in the middle of our society. It's nothing that has been talked about quite actively in the last years. And there's really no way that young people or people that are just not in the LGBTQ community can actively know about that specific topics. And that's what we are there for, to educate them on certain topics, to sensitize them for them to be like, hey, you see, there are people that are other and different, and you don't need to be afraid of them. They're not trying to be like snowflakes or something. That's like legit, and there are ways how you can make those people feel like they're part of society, because they are. And you can do this and that to make sure that they feel as they're part of the society. That's basically what we try to do.
So you're kind of just trying to bridge the gap between the people that don't understand it, and then also helping the people that are in those situations themselves, surrounded by people that also don't understand
exactly.
It.
Yeah.
Is that just local to you, or is that like nation? Or
it's all over Germany, actually. We are organized in certain groups. We have coordinators for the states that we are living in. We also have coordinators for the cities, and also coordinator for the country that we are currently in, Germany, for example. And since we're funded by the ministry, we get our, for example, if I have to go there and I happen to have school at that day, I just can like go in there and be like, yeah, I have to go to state X Epsilon, and you have to give me an absentee letter, so I'm free for the day.
Right. I mean, it's an important role to have in the world, for sure, especially in times like these. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. Me and James have spoken about it, and like generally the past, I think when me and him were going through school and things like that, it was a lot harder. Mm-hmm. We personally never had really anyone like that. There was like social workers and things like that that you could talk to. To be honest with you, the relevancy of it is more or less non-existent. At least it was for me. I think having those sort of people around now, as much as it's a bit more accepted nowadays than it was then, definitely is an even bigger step in the right direction for the world.
Yeah, certainly.
Definitely. Sorry to cut into you, James. But on the point of the time, it's also very important, especially depending on location, because even though obviously places with high populations, New York, the specific cities of different countries are going to have probably a higher tolerance for the different things that somebody may be, whether that's part of the LGBT or better understanding of the equality of races and better appreciation of other races. But specifically in places like the more rural areas of the world, it is far more difficult than it is in a city to possibly feel like you know what's going on. For me, I grew up in a very rural town with a population less than 3,000, and I knew pretty much nothing about the LGBT community, basically even that there was really much of an alternative to being heterosexual. And because of that, for the longest time, I didn't really consider that there was an alternative for what I might be as a person in my identity, both sexually and with my gender. And so basically, it wasn't as if I was repressing anything, but I just never had the thought that there was another option or another thing that somebody could identify as. And so being able to tell people in these smaller communities about these differences in people and these things that you can be is a super important thing to know about and learn about, especially at that age. When in health, I learned about the male and female reproductive organs, yeah, and that was it. There wasn't anything beyond men have sex with women and a condom is used for protection. Although even me having that in my school might have been a lucky thing. You think that's not always the case.
Yeah, a lot of things when I was growing up, and I'm sure you and James will probably agree with, in terms of sort of figuring out what you are, and then once you have figured it out, it's you end up kind of having to almost teach yourself these things.
Yes.
Or just learn it from experience almost. So yeah, it does suck how little documentation and education is actually on the matter. I mean, obviously, yeah, now there's the internet, but necessarily should a kid of that age really be looking into that stuff alone? I would say definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an issue. And that's honestly, Chris, LGBT Family and Games, or LFG, we talk about it all the time. We're a nonprofit organization, and we are on the internet, I think thankfully, in a lot of situations, because we are a place where people can talk about these topics without fear of being judged, ask questions. And certainly we take, you know, security and appropriateness very seriously in our communities. But organizations like yours and like LFG, and like some of the organizations we're associated with through Centerlink, are really essential in spreading education. Because when I was a kid, it was a completely different thing. There really weren't a lot of organizations out there doing this work to help kind of bridge the gap in the general public. So if you identified as gay or lesbian or even trans, there wasn't a lot of knowledge, especially through the public school system, like Alex was referring to.
When it comes to like sexual education, I think there's been a lot of, well, how do you say, progress in the last years, even here in Germany. When I was in elementary school, we had the first sexual education in first grade. And back then I remember that the parents were like a little bit outraged for sometimes, like they didn't just saw why people that young should be exposed to sexual topics. And I, for example, I think you cannot start with sexual education well early enough, actually. Actually, I had my first sexual education in kindergarten, and there was like this guy coming and like explaining to us how mama and papa were like baking a cake together, and then papa would add the eggs and mama would add the flour, and they would like stir the dough together.
I think that's the wrong way around.
Oh god. They would stir the dough together, and then they put it into the oven for 9 months, and then there's a baby coming up that they're gonna name. And that's like a really cute story, but I think that's just like not okay to teach people, because it's just straight up a lie. Like, what if they use that in school and they'll get bad grades, for example?
It's definitely pointless at that age. I'd probably say as soon as people touch teens, or mm-hmm. even as soon as they go into high school, it should definitely be a pretty in-depth conversation, because that is, to be honest with you, to my experience in general, obviously there's the occasional case that that's not always the situation, but generally that's when most people make bad decisions.
Well, I will say this. I actually heard a little bit of research on this particular subject that I found fascinating, because I would kind of think the same thing, that like the teenage years would be when it would be most pertinent. But a lot of experts will say that sometimes educating at a younger age helps prevent some issues of like sexual predators. It helps mm-hmm. educate kids yeah. about things to look out for. And they actually talk about now how it's important to use the correct terminology. While the baking the cake metaphor might be easier for somebody to go into a classroom and talk about, And I don't necessarily think that that should all happen in a classroom. I think that's really more for parents. Parents should take it upon themselves to teach their kids and have an open conversation, because they should be the adults that kids feel comfortable coming to if there's ever a question about sexual, you know, sex or sexuality. But yeah, the experts are now saying, like, you know, if you're using a metaphor, you should really use the correct terms. And, you know, in order to keep this kind of PG-13, I'm not going to go into further detail on that, but I actually found that quite fascinating. And I don't know if that's your experience in your organization. If you guys do, you know, I'm not sure exactly what age range you guys are working with.
We are working with people from sixth grade to really no upper end. We've been to universities, we've been to companies already. We gave briefings on LGBTQ topics when, for example, one guy was like actually CEO of a small company, and he outed himself as homosexual, and there were like a lot of homophobic things being said by their employees, and he wanted to have them actually being a little bit more educated on the topic so that there could be a little bit more tolerant towards their boss, which I think is I mean, the things they said were, I mean, like,
for him,
they were borderline. They were just like really damn straight up homophobic. Like, we're talking things like, yeah, but like,
yeah,
she's not wearing women clothing. So I'd never thought he would be gay, for example, just to like say one of the less.
Yeah, but like, it's such a ridiculous thing to say.
It is, yeah.
So like, my previous job before my current, so work-wise, I don't even really talk about any of this sort of stuff with them, because to be honest with you, I don't really care about their opinions as long as they kind of keep it to themselves on the matter. But I did have a lot of people explicitly like saying just terrible things. I reported it to management and explained why it kind of bothered me, because obviously I am in that situation as much as I don't tell them about it. And they basically just said to me, they're ignorant people, but they weren't going to do anything about it. And at that point I was just like, what are we doing? Yeah. But a lot of companies probably will deal with it like that, whether they're like-minded in that sense, or they just don't want to bring up that conversation as a situation. I think it's good definitely that you are, and the team that you work with obviously do that.
Yeah. No, I mean, seriously, because the company that I work for now has come a long way. I'm actually in a private branch, so it's a little different. But, you know, back when I started, it was in their handbook that, you know, their insurance benefits could only go to married couples and in parentheses, a man and a woman. So specifically excluding homosexual couples.
Right.
So, you know, it's improved over time in the United States. We've had some legal battles that have kind of turned, and I think more people have become a little bit more educated, but certainly what Jay is talking about, you know, having experience where you have an issue and trying to bring it to an HR department or higher up, that's where there's still going to be issues and people are going to usually kind of turn the other cheek. But I really appreciate the fact that your organization's going in and providing some of that education in companies, because I think that's missed sometimes.
I mean, 100%. When it comes to America, for example, you guys had same-sex marriage before Germany had it. So you've been like a little bit fast on that topic. And that's like, I remember when there was, well, gay marriage incorporated here in Germany, and they were like, yeah, but why do they need marriage? Oh my God, like, they're not being discriminated against. Like, why do they have marriage now?
Like, come on.
Exactly, Betty. Why do you need marriage? And it just they don't see people like that, don't see how they're discriminating against people. I just recently had to deal with a person who said that them seeing two guys kissing is like the equivalent of getting an unsolicited nude, for example. And that's just, how the heck is me kissing? How the heck is a picture of me kissing my boyfriend just as bad as getting an unsolicited pic of your wee wee? That's just not a thing. Like, come on.
That's on a completely different level. And it should be pointed out that there certainly is a lot of heterosexual public displays of affection that, you know, everybody in the LGBT community gets to witness on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. I'm personally not a fan of public displays of affection, but, you know, I certainly think that if we're going to talk about, you know, fairness, that we should treat everybody on an equal footing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if that person would be like, I don't enjoy seeing people kiss in general because I think it's disgusting, that's beyond a completely other level.
Yeah, certainly. That's
that's completely different.
Yeah.
But like, it's a different subject. Oh, it's
just two guys kissing. So it would be okay probably if it was two women. So here we are.
So what else you got? You do the educational portion of mm-hmm. the organization, but you know, what other initiatives do you guys have?
Oh, we actually guide people to have context, for example, when people out themselves and they experience problems in their social field. We actually guide them to the sources they need to improve those struggles. We can lead them to other organizations that help them with certain struggles. For example, we had people come to us after they got thrown out of home because they outed themselves to their parents and they just seeked help. And we kind of forwarded them to another organization that is actually taking on to those problems and is helping them overcoming them. We also educate, we also work in ties with the with the HIV help organization Germany of our of our city. And they're actually helping people who got, well, who are living with people that are HIV positive, who think they could be HIV positive. They tell them where they can get tested anonymously. And people that are diagnosed with HIV, how to get treatment, how to overcome all of this, how to get mental help and how to, well, get their stuff basically together if they suffer from it, like mentally and physically.
Okay.
Right. Got you.
Yeah.
Cool. Very, very cool. I mean, you're doing a lot of beneficial things, obviously ranging from the biology stuff,
LARPing,
all the way from the LGBT stuff. So, I mean, LARPing is free time. That's a hobby.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
by all means.
I mean, all of the voluntary stuff is my free time too. So,
well, yeah, but you know, you have a lot of stuff on your shoulders. So it's quite impressive that you managed to balance it all out.
I mean, during Corona, there's not really much I do. So,
yeah, of course.
I kind of feel like
I do understand that.
Nothing's up right now, and so it's too much free time, actually.
Speaking of which, Jay, are you guys back on lockdown?
Oh yeah, yeah. We've been on lockdown for the past 4 days, I think. Everything's slowly turning into a blur. I'm forgetting how everything works, or that there even is an outside at this point.
A window right there, buddy.
No, I'm kidding. It's not so bad. There are still people working from home. They have some people working in the offices, but very, very far away from each other. Like, generally speaking, there's not really much going on anyway because of it. So, yeah, it's a crazy time. It's a crazy time. Absolutely. This year has been insane. This will probably be one of the years that kids will be studying about in like 10 years time.
You know what I wonder about?
Yeah.
If 2020 will turn into like something that you say like, oh god, this is so, I work 24/7, or this is so 2020, like when something is bad, people will probably say, oh, it's so 2020. I don't know if that's a thing in America.
I don't know.
Possibly. I mean, yeah, it's hard to say. Like, I don't know. I don't know if it will ever be like referenced to me. It could be. But it's just crazy. Just the dramatics of the election, the COVID scare pretty much from the start of the year, now coming up to the end of it, and I imagine it's going to flow into next year as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely will.
Just how much everything has had to change now. A lot of people I know do like exercise classes and things like that. They've now had to move all of that online. Anyone that hangs out with their friends has to kind of like double guess everyone's plans. Like my brother was intending to get married in June. That all had to be cancelled, so that's pushed now to June next year. Yeah, it's a whole crazy situation. I have no idea what Christmas is going to look like for families. Yeah, I don't even know if I'm going to see anyone on Christmas. So, yeah, I don't know.
The future's a hard thing to predict.
Yeah.
That is the one constant thing. But I will say, if anybody pulls anything from this year, I imagine it will be a combination of the different art that has come out of everything going on, because of how art is super strong whenever there is sort of, so to speak, boxed in and sad and just in general isolated emotion.
Mm.
And so when we see everything that's come out of it in the art world afterwards, it's going to be incredibly interesting to psychoanalyze and just look and see all the different things that people have created.
Yeah, I think there's that. I think in a work perspective, a lot of companies have realized that they don't need to have people physically at work all of the time.
There's been a lot of ingenuity.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of companies will find they can save money by doing so as well, in certain places, essentially, because they're going to require less equipment, essentially, within their actual premises. So we'll see. We'll see. It will either be beneficial or it will be negative. My only fear, I think, for people on a day-to-day basis now with lockdowns and quarantines and such is just mental health. I think, obviously, a lot of people have struggled. Male suicides have majorly gone up during this whole thing. So yeah.
I just don't like the idea of living in a time that future historians will base their PhD on.
Yeah. It's one of those ones where you can tell people, I was alive.
Yes. Maybe we will be in the textbook. I don't know. Whippy cool.
I'm fairly certain. You know, I think so many things have been a first within the last, couple of years that we will certainly see.
Yet the first month alone, we had forest fires in Australia. All of that happens. And there's a global pandemic. Then there's elections. Then there's a lot of other things happening like this. This year's wild. Oh, God. 2019 was wild again, but I bet you nobody really knows what has gone down in 2019. Sorry for saying the bad words.
You're all good.
You're all good.
But I think we've covered pretty much everything we were going to cover.
Yeah.
We may actually end up bringing Chris back for another podcast in the future. He's quite a good friend of mine in general. So
thank you.
We've always got good stuff to talk about, generally speaking.
Can I still call you Salmon Sperm Guy?
I think next...
Yeah, you can call me Salmon Sperm Guy.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm sure. But I obviously, following weeks, we should have different guests. I think we've still got a few people lined up from all over the place, essentially. But yeah, set up a few... Well, James, sorry. Close it out. End it.
I thought that was Alex's job, but actually,
no, Alex's different job.
Okay. But yeah, check us out on lgbtfam.org for information on LFG. The podcast is on lgbtfam.fm. If you'd like to join us here as a guest, send us an email at podcast@lgbtfam.org. And all our other social stuff is going to be up on the screen so you can see it. If you're joining us on a podcast, you can check us out in the description. We'll have all the information in there. So you can visit our links and join in the community. We are on Discord quite a bit. We hang out in the voice channel and you can give us feedback on there as well. So you can join us at discord.gg/LGBTfam. I think that's all I got.
Let's just bide in my time. I've been planning to harass you, but couldn't find my trump card today, so we'll have to leave without anything. Sorry.
Well, our guest has left. I guess this is the end.